This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. It's time to step up to the plate with two birds on a bat with Jim, Steve, and Fish.
A swing and a miss, and that's the winner! That's the winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!
And there that is! In the left field! Hit number 3,000! A run is scored!
Smith corks one into right down the line! It may go! Go crazy, folks! Go crazy!
A high pop ball! The Cardinals there! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant!
Breeze hits it in the air to center. We will see you tomorrow night.
Swing and a miss! The Cardinals are world champions for 2006.
In the air to left, well hit. Back is Craig. What a team. What a ride. The Cardinals are world champs in 2011.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Two Birds on a Bat, your St. Louis Cardinals fan podcast. I'm part of your team, Jimbo, here. Let me welcome in two of the biggest Cardinal fans you know, Steve-O and Fish. What's up, fellas?
Back at it.
Happy to be here.
Well, I want to jump right away to our fan line because we have our good friend Benji Molina with us again this week, as Benji's going to be with us on Fridays. Just to give you his take on our beloved Redbirds and where they sit in this wild card playoff push. Benji, what's going on?
Hey, guys. How you guys doing today?
Well, you know, I tell you, I think we're in a – I don't know if we're in a much better spot than we were last week, but we're right there, obviously. We almost got some help from the Phillies last night as the Mets had to come back twice to get that win. But, you know, the Cardinals are sitting right there, and I got to tell you, I like our chances. What do you think?
Yes, I told you, man. You never give up on those guys. Those guys, they played – they were so professional, and they played with so much heart and – they really, really were good, the St. Louis Cardinal name in front of their jerseys, man. They don't care about their names on the back. They just want to win a game. And I told you last week, I said, man, you can count these guys out. And look, they're showing it.
You know, we're sitting 10 games left in the season. I know that the manager's always got a tough job to do when it comes to resting guys. Do you think we're at the point now where it's got to be all hands on deck and we're just going to have to play, you know, Yachty? I know it's hard on a catcher. Maybe Diaz. I know he's just coming back and they're keeping an eye on him. But are we at the point now where these guys got to play every game here on out?
Heck yeah. There's no chance to rest anybody. I wouldn't rest anybody. I would go up to everybody, all the guys, one by one, and I'll tell them, hey, listen, this is our season right here, 10 games, and we got to go. So get yourself prepared, get yourself ready, get some treatment, do whatever you have to do. But these 10 games, everybody's all out, so let's do it. You know, that's what I would do.
As a catcher, when you've been through this, obviously, so as a catcher, do you have to change up your routine a little bit to make sure you're available every day?
Maybe not, depending on how things are going or how much you caught during the year. But I don't think you need to change anything. I think if you are prepared for a full year of Major League Baseball, getting paid that much, I think you should be ready, you know, unless you're hurt, it's different. But if not, you should be ready to go, you know. I mean, this is not – you don't sign for 140 games. You sign for 162 games and to try to be part of it, and that's what you got to go for, you know. You got to be ready.
Yeah, here with Benji Molina, a former All-Star, Gold Glove, World Series winning catcher, and brother of current Cardinal catcher Yadier Molina. Obviously, you know Yadi better than anybody. Is this part of why he went through that body transformation that he went through a couple of years ago so that he would be more prepared down the stretch and for the longer seasons to play more? Did that play into his mindset of when he got himself in this great shape he's in now?
I don't think that he did it for the end of the year, you know, like the last 10 games or something like that. I think he did it overall for his future, you know, like he's in a better shape. I'm sure he feels lighter. I'm sure he feels better on his knees, and he might prolong his career 5 more years or so, you know. So I think he did it more for that than just the end of the year. But it's good. obviously it's great that he's in that shape, so he helps out, you know, obviously he helps out to for him to the last, you know, the last push.
You know, we got the two games in a row that we needed from San Francisco over the weekend on Saturday and Sunday, and got a tremendous performance out of Reyes, and we talked about him. We went into Colorado and took care of business the first two games. Third game, we caught a hiccup. It looked like maybe the rookie Weaver, his breaking ball wasn't working. Pretty much it was fastballs over the plate. We talked a little bit about Jaime Garcia and his availability and his ability to shut other teams down with his stuff when it's right. Boy, he came in for those four innings and looked awful good. Do you see Garcia getting back into the rotation now?
Well, one game, it's really hard to say. But knowing Jaime a little bit and knowing how he is, how hard he works, and how tough he is, I think it'll be nice, you know, to have a veteran guy going at it instead of a rookie. Not that the rookie cannot do the job. Maybe the rookie is okay, you know, can handle the pressure. Talking about rookies, you know, I had Lackey, I had Rodriguez, K-Rod in the Angels, and Scott Shields and all those, and they were really good. So, but I'm saying, like, now that Jaime's probably finding a little bit of a groove, and maybe Yadi can help him out too, so I would go with a veteran over the rookie.
You know, Fish brought it up to you last week. When he's right, nobody, I mean, can shut a team down like Jaime can because he works in the bottom of the zone. This Cardinal defense, we've talked a little bit about it. It needs to be better. There have been some better plays made. With the veteran leadership on this team, do you think they can kind of sew that up a little bit with 10 games ago?
I think they'll be fine. I think they're going to come up, like I told you before. I think they're really concentrating on these 10 games. They're not concentrating in what's coming after. They really wants to win every game. Like, I'm sure they're going to go at it today against the Cubs. They're going to be going at it against, I think it's Cincinnati and Pittsburgh or something, whatever it is. They're going to be ready for those guys. I bet you anything. These guys are really, really, really good at doing that, you know, keeping it professional and going at it and battle every day.
Now, Cincinnati's obviously been out of this playoff picture for quite some time. You know, they're dealing with some veteran guys that are banged up. You know, they're already they're obviously in that thinking about next year mode. What's it like for a club like Cincinnati when they know? I mean, they know, right? Like, they're not oblivious to this. They know that they're coming into St. Louis. The Cardinals are fighting for their playoff lives. Do they have a little bit of, like, I want to stick it to the Cardinal attitude going in that clubhouse, you think? Or do you think they're like, well, you know, our season's over. We're just going to go out and play?
No, I think it's the other way, the first one. I think it's they go at it. They're going to go out and try to ruin the Cardinals' chances and however they can. I mean, this is rivalry. This is guys from the same division. I'm sure they don't like each other in baseball, you know, not outside of baseball. But in baseball, I'm sure they would love to hurt the Cardinals' chances, you know, and they're going to come out fighting. Maybe if they play all young guys, well, the young guys don't understand what's going on, but if they keep it as the veterans out there, they play, I bet you 100% they're going to try to ruin the Cardinals' chances, man.
Hey, Benji, this is Fish. Now, I got the feeling that Reyes is going to have his spot to the end of the year no matter what happens. If Jaime gets the chance to start again, I don't think it'll be in Reyes' spot. It'll be that fourth or fifth spot, because I feel like Reyes is number three right now. I really do. How important is it for a young guy like Reyes to have a Yadier behind the plate? It, you know, being so young and having that confidence of having a guy like Yadier behind the plate, what's that effect does that have on him?
Oh, man, I tell you what, it's so important to have a guy that behind the plate that really cares for you, and you know that he's going to be out there for you. And you know he's going to go out there to try to win a game and everything. He's not worried about his hitting. He's not worried about anything else. He's just worried about you throwing seven shutout innings. And that's what he worries about. So it helps 100%. And about Jaime, I mean, obviously you guys have seen him, how he's going. I'm not saying he might come back and do good. All I'm saying is, like, you know, like in Weaver and him, you can make one start, you know, half and half or something like that, and they both be all right, you know?
Yeah, you mentioned earlier that when you were going through those runs with your team, you had younger guys and you had veterans. Did you approach it differently? Like when you were getting ready to start the game, did you know going in that I'm going to have to approach this differently with the veteran guy in this tight situation versus the rookie? I mean, did you prepare for that?
No, I don't think you prepare for that. I think you have a game plan on what you're going to do behind the plate and obviously the pitcher, and I think you go with that. I don't think you can do, you can get prepared for any of those things. I think you just prepare yourself for the Cubs today and whoever it is, and you go at it, you know, me against you.
Well, that's great insight here with Benji Molina, all-star, gold glover, World Series-winning catcher, and again, brother of current Cardinal catcher Yadier Molina. Benji, I know you let us know today that you were up against it with time. We appreciate you giving time. You are coming in town next week if you want to tell our listeners a little bit real quick about what you're doing. And if I'm not mistaken, I think we're going to have you with us next Friday. Is that correct?
We'll hope so. We'll hope to get together, obviously, and get this thing rolling. I think it's going to be a great event for the Spanish-speaking people, you know, and Hispanic around St. Louis area and wherever they're going to listen to. So I think it's going to be awesome. I think we're going to have a good time out there, enjoy a few games, and a lot of Spanish-speaking people are going to enjoy the game. I'm sure of that. And I'm excited for it. I can't wait, and it's going to be fun.
Well, Benji, I tell you what, you're first class. You do a great job. We love getting your insight. We love your honesty and what you bring to the game for the everyday Cardinal fan, because at the end of the day, we love guys like you and how you go about your game. So take care of your wife. Tell her we said hello, and we'll see you in St. Louis.
You got it, buddy, and you guys are lucky to have Cardinal baseball there, man. They love their town. They love their two birds, and they go at it 100%, 150% every single day for you guys, so you should be lucky.
All right, Benji. Take care, buddy.
Hey, Benji, good luck in your broadcast there.
You got it, buddy. We'll see you soon.
That's former Cardinal coach, Giant World Series, Angels, Benji Molina. Great guy. Gives great insight. I know that guys off the air, we've talked a little bit about Benji and the insight he gives. They talk about catchers making great coaches. Do you guys feel like when you're a catcher, because you're so involved, that maybe you have a little bit of a different opinion on this thing than other guys?
Oh, absolutely. You can see it all over the league. I mean, guys that have been so-so catchers, not that Benji was, I mean, but went on to be great managers. But what I love about this Benji man is that he is so passionate about baseball that he can't help but to be honest.
Yeah,
like
that's
you
true.
Can't sugarcoat this thing because he's so passionate about it, and I love that.
I think you look at it from, what you're seeing with catchers nowadays is, a lot of them aren't hitting 340, 330, 300. A lot of them are your defensive specialty and field generals. So I think that translates better into the management side of it, just because they're more cerebral. They're starting to look at scouting reports, and they're doing those things that a left fielder isn't doing, or even a shortstop, which, people generally think is their field general. Those guys are out there, in order to have a starting shortstop, you got to hit, 25, 30 bombs and hit 300. And the catcher position's really been the – hey, we're going to be the CEO of the field and do the stuff behind the scenes, make sure everybody's in position. So I think that really translates in, and that's why you're starting to see the – I won't even say starting. I mean, for the last 15 years, the Bochies and the Matheny's and the Girardis, and I think there's another
Socia,
one. Socia. Socia, yeah.
I agree. And the thing is look at the transformation as – I mean, we're dating ourselves with our age here, but when we were young – you didn't mind having a light-hitting shortstop or second baseman because they were so important to the team defensively. That changed over the years, obviously, when Cal Ripken came along and some of these other guys. But now they give up a little bit of defense for all that offense up the middle. They haven't done that, though, at the catcher's position. It's the one position that you cannot live with a subpar catcher back there if he's down. Now, I will say that they tried it with Piazza. But how well did that work out for the teams he played for overall? I mean, he wasn't terrible defensively. But he wasn't that stalwart back there for sure.
And he was an exceptional hitter.
Exceptional.
So, I mean, he wasn't even just a pretty good hitter that we'll get by with this, even though he's not good defensively. He was an exceptional hitter. I'm glad you brought that up, though, Jimmy. He's kind of stealing my thunder, because I was going to point that out myself, that that's just the one position that's always been that way. You really can't trade the offense for the defense and be great. You got to have a guy back there that can play, especially where they can run today. I mean, you got to have people that can be able to throw people out. And I don't know how many people Molina throws out. It's more the threat of it. It's more the threat that teams won't run consistently on them because they know that Yadi could throw them out.
Yeah, he's not giving up the weak stolen base to, you know, a Paul Goldschmidt who right. steals one. You know, I mean, they're not going to run on Yadi. You know, they might get a cheap one off the pitcher. But for the most part, yeah. I mean, you look at it across the league, you know, there's your Billy Hamiltons that are going to say, I don't care who's behind a plate, I'm running. But a lot of stolen bases in the major leagues are timing stolen bases and just lackadaisical defensive type positions.
It's come down to you bring it up, like the stopwatch. Very simple now. They break it down before games now. When they talk about whether it be a reliever or a starter, they've got it down to a science of, you know, of exactly how long it takes them to get the ball home. Right then, they get into predictable off speed counts. Or wasted pitch counts, right? So the game has gotten to be the game within the game, so to speak, when it comes to people. Now, when you have a guy like Billy Hamilton who's just a pure speedster, I mean, and he's going to go, and he's got his own unique technique about stealing bases, which I find fascinating. I'm really shocked he doesn't get picked off more. Have you guys seen this? He literally is moving his feet towards the bag the whole time. He's like, remember Ricky Henderson, how he'd get set, might hop a little bit, but he was set. This Billy Hamilton's feet are moving the whole time towards second base, if you ever notice it. So he's almost in a moving pattern towards it. It's really interesting.
Hey, I don't know what Ricky Henderson's theory was on his stealing bases, but he did pretty good.
Yeah, he did phenomenal.
He was all right.
Yeah, he was okay. Pretty good. So tied for first.
Yeah.
Tied for first.
Here's a stupid question.
Oh, okay.
Boy, you got a lot of those.
I know. Just kind of off the cuff as we're thinking about it, because we're sitting here in the sweltering heat of St. Louis, it sounds like, or feels like outside.
Sweltering?
Sweltering.
Okay.
How much of a difference, from your guys' perspective, and I'll give you my ballplayer's perspective, but how much of a difference does it make when you get into, they got a couple games out in San Fran and a couple days in Colorado. They're going to go to Chicago. They're missing our last heat wave here in St. Louis. And by the time they get back here, you know, we're going to be sunny in 74. To me, as a ball player, I get more energy when I go to ballpark, and it's just a beautiful day or a beautiful night. There's a different feel to it as opposed to 106 degrees out.
Don't we need the heat for the home runs, though?
Hey, listen.
At home?
I mean,
it's even easier to go to a game and sit up there in the stands like I get to do and eat six hot dogs when it's 74 degrees
versus 90.
105.
Well, I mean, Busch Stadium, if anybody's been there, any of our Cardinal fans have been there, which I'm sure
and
you have.
And they've been there.
That stadium, if it's hot out or sunny out, it holds the heat and there's no air movement.
It's hot.
But you get into November, and we've played in November. If it's cold outside,
it is cold.
There is no in between. And I'm telling you, if you're hot, you're sitting next to some fat, sweaty guy who's eating six hot dogs.
That's me.
I'm looking at you.
That's right.
Who wants to take his shirt off and put his sweaty, hairy back all over you.
That's right.
Yeah.
And only didn't eat seven because I didn't have enough money to eat a seventh one. Hey, I want to touch on this real quick because I may be wrong. I haven't seen as many games in the new Busch Stadium as I had in the old one. It's better in this one than it was in the old one, wasn't it? That old one it trapped the heat.
Yeah.
You were dying in that thing.
It just seemed,
it was like
a
crock pot.
I think it's like anything else. I think it's positioning of where you're sitting when the sun and where it goes. I mean, it just depends. But you're right. Hey, we got a tweet from our friend Derek Gould, and we've got our answer. Garcia will start Monday.
Wow.
So, yeah.
But not – this is what I'm wondering, and I don't know if Derek would be so kind to tweet back. Not in place of Reyes' start.
No, it wouldn't
Reyes
be.
Reyes is going to start. That's what I said, yeah.
This is a modified thing to get ready because it looks like Garcia goes Monday and Wainwright goes Tuesday.
Right.
So
yeah. I can agree with that. But yeah. I think you got to have Reyes in the lineup.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, it looks like we're going to go Leak, Reyes. Yeah, I mean, that's where we're at. I would have to say that as I head into this last week, I like our chances. We get our home games here. We know that San Francisco has to go back and play the Giants again, which proved to be really hard
the
on
Dodgers.
Them. We almost got – I mean, we couldn't ask for as much help. I mean, we didn't even have the Mets in this equation, Rastik, right? It seemed like it was Giants, Cardinals. Well, the Atlanta Braves brought the Mets back into this equation. Now, they both won last night, which we didn't play, so now we have a game in hand, which forces us to win that game to stay tied. But be that as it may – we have the Cubs in front of us. I'm of the belief that they're going to give us all that in a bag of chips that we can handle this week. But, you know, I think our Cardinals, I said this to Fish a while back, and I'm going to maintain it. We are now put in a position to have to play for our lives, and if we make it through there because of that, I like our chances.
And that's what makes baseball beautiful, is that we're in a position where we do have to play, that we weren't up 15 games. It's been exciting, but I will say this. Anybody that thinks that you're going to go into Chicago right now and play the Cubs and it be easy has bumped their head. Because this is not good. I mean, I think the Cardinals can do that. I think the Cardinals can go up there and win two or three. But to just assume it's going to be an easy ride, no. Well, There's no way.
Let me tell you what the Cubs are going to be doing. They're not going to be playing tight. They are going to be loose. And I know that's been their formula all year, and that's what Madden is bringing to the Cubs. But they are going to be swinging from the heels, and they are going to want to put on a show and stomp the Cardinals. And they're going to be – I mean, free and easy, bud. Free and easy.
For Madden, Steve-O, for Madden, that is a great managerial look because he's got this such young team.
Right.
To have that looseness. Now, I think you could be more of a horse's ass and make things tighter if you got this veteran leadership, which I know they got some veterans. But the team is so young that I think this looseness has really, really aided them.
Yeah, and then on the adverse side of that, you look at the Giants, and they've blown 9 saves in a past, whatever it is, month and a half, and they are playing tight, and they don't want to get into a late-inning close game.
I don't know how loose Bochy is, but have you ever seen a man smile?
No.
He does not appear, if you can judge a book by a cover, he does not appear to be a loose guy.
So they're going to be playing tight. I think the Mets, obviously, with what they've been through this last week, I think they'll be a little bit tighter. It's going to come down to what we can do against that formidable force up there in Chicago. I mean, if we can play with them and you know, have a little success up there and beat them down, and we have the team, we can do it. We can play with them. I think we've taken the series so far up in Chicago.
So, yeah.
If we can go up there and continue to have that success, I think you're going to start seeing a little bit more tightness on the West Coast and I personally like to play first, you know, and I think playing here in the Central and then having a look out what San Francisco's doing is going to bode well for that. But we'll still have our eyes on what the Mets are doing out on the East, right?
Well, you know, you're talking about the Mets, and how could it – you know, they could obviously right the ship, not that they've really lost control of it. But how could not what just happened up there to them with the Mets in Atlanta, how could that not creep into your mind thought? As you're a player, how can that not tighten the screws?
Well, I mean,
you should have went in there and won 2 or 3 easily. You're thinking, and you don't. That's got to be in the back of your head.
But you're looking at who is it? Inciarte? Is that how you say his last name?
Yep.
Goes out and just robs a walk off home run. I mean, this is the Braves. They're not giving up. So I don't think you should expect, you know, Cincinnati to lay down. I don't think you should expect Pittsburgh to lay down. That you're going to get that from every team because they're professionals, and these guys are going to play hard. So, you know, you look at it on paper and you think, okay, well, we have Cincy coming in after the Cubs and the Pirates, so maybe it might be a little bit easier for us, but everybody's going to play hard at this point.
Well, the thing about the Cubs is they're not going to lay down, but if they were to lay down, they're so talented that they would still be tough to beat. If you go into Cincinnati and they lay down, you're going to beat them. I mean, they're just not that talented right now at this point. But the Cubs got so much talent that, you know, when a guy – you lay down like as a mental thing. You don't approach an at-bat. Like, Chris Bryant's not going to go to the plate saying, okay, I've laid down. He's going to approach that with the seriousness that everyone approaches an at-bat in the big leagues. He's going to try to hit the ball.
Right. Now, do you like that team up there? I mean, I know you don't like the Cubs, and we can get into this a little bit. But do you like the way the team's constructed up there and their players?
Yeah, I do. I really do.
I mean, it's from a baseball perspective, I look at it, and I love the way that team's put together.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's exciting baseball to watch them play, you know, defensively, offensively, pitching-wise. You know, and I know we've kind of had this conversation, you know, I'll get Jimmy all fired up if I needed to. But at the end of the day, that's an exciting ball club. And I don't want them to win the World. I want the Cardinals, obviously, to win the World Series. But, I'm thinking if the Cardinals are out of it, I'd rather watch the Cubs.
Don't say it.
No, I'd rather watch them. I mean, who else would you rather see win outside of the Cardinals?
It'd be fun to watch the Cubs perform. And, Yeah, they got it all going on there. They got a good team.
I mean, 1908 doesn't mean anything to anybody outside of Chicago and St. Louis. You know, Texas right. doesn't know what 1908 means. Right. You know,
they actually think it's a beer or something.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Colorado doesn't care, but our rivalry, we care as a fan. Hey, we want to push out another year and another year and another decade and another 100 years if we can. But the way this team's constructed, if the Cardinals don't win, I would love to see the Cubs make a run just because I like that team and the players on it and the way they're constructed.
Hey, it's hard for me to say, but I was saying on one of our another podcast shows, which what makes this thing beautiful, you got to start listening to these podcasts. But I was saying another show we do is that I hate to say this, it leaves a bad taste in my mouth, but I'm thinking of Cy Young and the MVPs coming out of Chicago this year. I really think it should be Bryant and Lester in the National League. I hate to say that. I hate myself for saying that.
You're going Lester over Hendricks.
My kids hate me for saying that. Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, I think he's pitched really good down the stretch. I think that means something to my mind. I think.
I would agree with you. I think the way he's pitched down the stretch has got to have something to do with it. Hendricks is kind of, you know, he's not the sexy name either that Lester is. Lester got the big deal to come over and be, you know, let's face it, he was one of the first parts of this deal, right, to do this thing. But, yeah, you know, I got to agree with Fish. It's going to be a rough one for the Cardinals as well. Now, if we can somehow get into this playoff series and we can beat these guys in a division series, I think nobody will really care.
Obviously.
We used to handle Lester pretty good. Yeah. Used to.
Well, obviously, that's our number one as a fan. We would love, hey, just let's win the wild card, and let's go play a five-gamer against the Cubs, and let's put it on the line. Strap it on and see what's going on, and let's take them down. That's obviously goal number one.
At this point, because the Cubs have had all this media attention, they're the best team, they're going to win a World Series, they haven't been there since 45, they haven't won since 08, all that crazy crap. If the Cardinals were to get into the playoffs, which I believe they will, and got the matchup against the Cubs and eliminated the Cubs, in my own – I know this isn't true for everybody else, but my own personal perspective – I think that may mean as much to me as one of our World Series. I may give one of our World Series rings back, championship trophies back, just to say we eliminated the
damn
Cubs.
I'm not giving anything back, but I agree with you. It would be – and it probably because of the big bully thing going on right now, right? That's the thing. It's the – obviously, it's fashionable and it's good to not like the Cubs, right? I mean, it's a prerequisite if you want to be a fan of Two Birds on a Bat. You got to hate the Cubs. But the bottom line is this. It's the big bully thing going on. You know, they basically have this insurmountable lead in the division. You know, they got all the, you know, they got the Bryant Rizzo thing going on. Then they got all this other. So the bottom line is, to your point, it would be about as big.
Phenomenal.
So, hey, on that note, as we head to Chicago, let's take a look at today's lineup. It just came out. I want to run it by you guys and get your thoughts and see what the first thing you say is. So we've got Carpenter leading off, playing second base. Jerko at short, batting second. Piscotty in right, batting third. Adams at first, batting fourth. Then Molina, Grichik, Peralta at third. Wong in left field, and Mike Leake pitching.
Well, you said that the other day that you were talking to me. It may have been off air. You were talking about how they have to get Wong into the lineup. And now, I don't know about you, but I would have never thought left field. But that's exactly what you were saying, that the way he's playing right now, that he's played himself into the lineup. But you can't put him at second in front of Carpenter. You know, you got to play Jerko. So what do you do? And it looks like they've done it.
I'm going to give you there's a couple names noticeably absent from this lineup. The first one being everybody is going to right away want to know where Diaz is at, right?
Right.
Everybody's going to want to know that.
Moss.
Okay. Moss is the one that's going to come up. Now, the thing is, Wong is in left field, obviously, instead of Moss right now. Okay. So the guy that is in this lineup that everybody's asking why is he in this lineup is Peralta, who has struggled. So – I mean, what's your guys' thought?
But Moss is 4 for his last 50 or something like that.
Peralta can't be far behind him.
I'm not that anybody's.
Who's pitching that for them, did you say?
Arrieta, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're going to, you know, so my point is, you know, you got Adams in there. You got, you know, you're trying to get some left-handed bats in there. Well, you got one on the bench. My thing is this, if you were going to play Moss, why is he not playing today?
Yeah, you know, I don't know with this crazy lineup. Why wouldn't Wong play third, Moss play first?
You mean Wong play second, Carpenter play third?
No, but yeah, that's even better.
Yeah.
Really what I was trying to do is get Adams out of the lineup.
Oh, you want Adams out?
Adams out of the lineup, get Moss back over. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Well,
I don't like the Adams thing at all. I mean,
you're just not an Adams fan.
No, I never have been. And you know what? I know that it's almost like if the guy got a chance to go somewhere else, especially an American League team, I think someone would find the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. I think he's a guy that could easily hit 30 home runs in this league playing the American League.
Well, but you might be right.
I don't know.
I mean, I feel like you do. I feel like he's one of those guys that the minute you traded him, he would hit 30 home runs. I think he obviously could. Now, we've sat there and watched him go stretches upon stretches of hits, but where's the power? And what do we expect from a big guy that plays first base? Well, we expect power. And here's the thing, we need it.
What do you expect when you're sitting there watching a game 3 years ago and he hits one 480 feet?
Right.
I mean, you're wondering where that's at on a little bit more consistent basis.
Here's my thing, and this is where I started to have a problem with Matt Adams, and not personally, obviously, I don't know the man, but it was either a year ago or a year and a half ago or something that it seemed like the whole conversation was going around him beating the shift and laying down bunts and hitting the ball to left field. I'm like, who does that?
He was doing it. He was trying.
I know, so my point is why? This is not what we want you to do. Let me tell you.
In fairness to him, has he been caught up in this JD Drew type of thing? Where I think with me he has been that I think I expect more, and if he doesn't reach those expectations that I have in my head, then I'm dogging him, and that may not be fair because he's probably played okay. But I get this expectation where he should be hitting 25 or 30 home runs and hitting 270, driving in 85 runs. I don't think that's a stretch for this guy.
Well, it's not. And why is it not a stretch? Because that's the production you typically get from a first baseman.
But he's got himself in a spot now that, you know, really he don't even play. The reason he's in the lineup today, I don't know if it's because Arrieta's a right-hander or what, but Moss is a left-handed bat too. I don't know the answer to that.
But hang on. Whose fault is it that he's not playing? He's been given a lot of opportunity.
Well, yeah, I'm not trying to point blame or take credit or any of that. I'm just saying that he's really got himself in a position where he's a non-factor, really.
Well,
I you know what, when, going back to the beating the shift, he has to beat the shift. You got to be able to beat that shift, and you got to do it once or twice and do it with ease to get away from that shift. And, you know, I know you want him to swing away.
Yeah, but this isn't Wade Boggs or Tony Gwynn. I don't know that he's capable of beating the shift. He's not geared. He's never hit like that in his life.
He's not a 330 hitter that hits the ball the other way.
He's never hit this way in his life. To think this man's going to come up and beat out a couple bunts and slap the ball to left field to get to beat the shift, I don't know what it's proven. I don't think it helps. So if he does that, are guys going to go away from the shift?
Listen, there's guys that do a fake drag bunt just to bring that third baseman in, okay?
Adams?
No, what I'm saying is that's baseball. They do things to level the playing field because it's a chess match. So if you're sitting down there playing third base and you're 15 steps behind the bag and somebody lays one down, well, guess what? Next time you get up, they're only 5 steps behind the bag, and now you can rope a rocket down the
line. Yeah, but Steve-O, that's not what's happening here.
I get it, but I think he needed to try at least to do that to ease up that defensive shift on him.
I don't think it's done him any good. But I don't think that's why he's in the position he's in either, because he couldn't beat the shift or whatever. I don't think that has anything to do with it. I will say that he did try. I think it was unsuccessful, although I'd seen him beat it a few times. I just don't think that he's geared to hit that way. I don't think it does himself any good, which in turn doesn't do the club any good. I don't know.
Well, okay, so here's what I'll ask you then, Steve. And again, this is just a question. Wouldn't it stand to reason if it was that easy they'd all do it?
It's not easy.
You would think if a left-handed batter's up and they shift him around, why don't they all drop down bunts down the third base line then if it's that easy?
Well, I mean, you can get into this. That's modern-day baseball, okay? I think if you looked at it back in the team baseball eras where it was the 50s or the 60s or whatever, you might see them laying it down. But we're not technically in what we would traditionally call a team baseball type era. So it's not easy to do, but just the threat of it equals the playing field just a smidgen. So maybe the shifting is, you know, if he does it once or twice. Now, you can't do it and be unsuccessful, but you got to show that you can do it, okay? And then that changes things just a little bit.
The one thing you brought up earlier, I think that has to apply or be applicable to a certain style of player, because I would certainly agree with that if you got Matt Carpenter. you know, he's skillful enough with that bat to do those things to bring that guy in and say, hey, you're not going to play way that back deep on me. I don't know if that has any effect on Matt Adams doing it.
I'll give you an example. Ozzie Smith told Vince Coleman. He goes, if you can lay down a couple of bunts down to the third baseman and beat him out, which he had the speed to do, but you got to go work on that part of your game, that brings that third baseman in three or four steps, and now a normal ground ball, a routine ground ball, which they got to make a great play on, not a routine ground ball for me, but a routine ground ball for a major leaguer, might get through because the guy's playing four or five steps in. So it's a chess match. It's the same thing on, you know, we can talk about it on pitching with changing eye levels, throwing a breaking ball in the dirt. This is a thinking man's game. That's why a lot of fans out there, a lot of people out there in the world don't like baseball because they don't understand the thought process that goes into it. They think that, hey, guess what? Look at that. The whole side of the field is open. That's easy to do. It's not easy to do. You got to work on it. And the reason why they do the shift is because they know it's not easy to do.
Hey, that's why St. Louis is the world's greatest fans. I've said it over and over. I'll never back away from that. You can read nationally, oh, we drink the Kool-Aid, we whatever. We do have the world's greatest fans. And here's why. Not because we stand up and clap. Not because we show appreciation. Because we understand that very thing you're talking about. Not having been a great baseball player myself, I still absolutely understand those things you're talking about. Whether I'm right or wrong, I understand them. I see them. As I watch the game, I see them. Vince Coleman, great advice from Ozzie, by the way. Different type of player.
Completely.
He was a slap hitter anyway.
Well, wait a minute. Let's not – the one thing we haven't talked about when it comes to the shift, and I you know what, I hate it so much that I don't want to spend much more time on this, but the reality of it is the shift works for a variety of reasons, and one of them being that it's part of a game plan as well. The shift does not work if they are all pulled to the right side and the pitcher's throwing him outside.
Right.
Okay, which also lends itself to that nobody ever thinks about this. The hitter knows darn good well they're going to beat him up inside, so he's not laid on fastballs inside. So it comes down to pitch quality as well.
Hey, Without a doubt.
Yeah, okay, so hey, I want to get back to this rotation because I figured it out here and I want to get your guys' thoughts on it. So with the changes they've made, here's where we sit today with 10 games left, right? So five-man rotation, everybody gets two starts, right? If it comes down to we have to do it. So since we have Leak today, it's Leak, Reyes, Seamart, Garcia, and Waino. Okay, that means if this thing comes down to the wire, okay, that's your rotation for the next five as well. So then I ask you, we get into this thing, and we have to use everybody as is.
It's Leak pitching the playoff.
No, it doesn't necessarily have to be Leak because you get 2 days. Is it Wednesday night?
You do get 2 days.
Okay, well, so does that mean that sets it up to be Martinez?
Martinez.
Well, not only that, though, Jimmy, at this point, we're talking about guys pitching on 3 days rest. And that second go-round, I know you're shaking your head, Steve-O. Mm-hmm. That's just the way I feel. I don't care. So if you shuffle this thing around and get a chance to throw Martinez or even Wainwright, or for me, even Reyes, on 3 days rest as opposed to starting Leak again.
Well, I can promise you they're not going to do that with Reyes. They're not going to do it with that arm.
Because he's young.
That's
only
because
he's young.
No way.
We have the answer to our question from the podcast for the last 3 weeks.
It's Martinez.
Martinez is, and we called it.
Well, we said that we thought he was the one.
Pretty easy. But we're not rocking
science. Well, no, but not easy because, and here it's not easy.
It was
how about
easy
this
for me?
Well, no. What about this? Let me give you this hypothetical. Waino is now scheduled to pitch the last game of the season. What if we're in? Does he skip Waino and save Waino for the wild card game? There's your question.
No.
Well, he sure has it set up that way.
Now, you just complicated things for me.
But it's real.
I sure wouldn't think. Yeah, it's absolutely real.
It's real.
I don't know. You have to see how guys feel. I mean, at the end there, you're going to have to see how guys feel. But, yeah, you'd like Wainwright or Martinez pitching that.
He has absolutely. This thing is absolutely set up for him, probably in council with Mo, with Lilliquist. He has absolutely set this thing up to in council decide, given the opportunity to pick between Martinez and Waino. Absolutely.
Well, then I think that. Then who do you say they've set it up for Wainwright? Is that what you're telling me?
No, as an option.
As an option, if given that option. If not given the option, what he said is that with this rotation, and they moved with this rotation, it's worked out to where, hey, if it comes down to the last game of the season, we got Waino on the mound, and it's Martinez in the wild card game.
Oh, but I agree with that.
But
right.
He's also left himself open to, if for some reason this thing shakes out and we're in, I can skip that last start if it doesn't really matter. And now he's got a choice to make between Waino and Seamart.
And that might be a matchup.
There's not a choice there.
Well, I don't think there is.
Did they get in a bus wreck and bump their heads? There's no choice there. It's got to be Martinez.
And here's the deal. And here's the deal with that. And I will say this, too. I'm with you on that. Because if that's the play, because Waino then will start no matter what. And then he would be prepared to pitch the first game of a series if we should win the playoff. Or the one-game playoff. So that would be right. That would make more sense.
That's what Matheny's telling them, to make everybody feel good in this equation. But to me, the bottom line is if you got the one game, you got to go with Martinez, man.
Well, Jimmy, I think you're onto something. I think, if you're in and he has both options, it's going to come down to a matchup thing, because I think you would rather have Martinez for two starts minimum, on a five-game series. And I like Martinez against the Cubs better. I think I like Wainwright against the Cubs right now.
And if that's okay, so if you're thinking that way, then you throw Waino in the wild card game.
Yeah, if it's set up that way, and it might come down to if you have the Mets.
Are you at home? Are you on the road? Right. What's the split? What's the breakdown? They got the numbers. I'm telling you, there's a reason for this.
Well, part of the problem is they got the numbers, and that don't always matter.
No, that's true.
Sometimes it goes beyond that.
You're right. But I will say this. And you brought it up, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, and it's something that you wouldn't think you'd want to overcomplicate. Martinez, by far, has been their best starter this year, so you would think it'd be a no-brainer. But the reality of it is, if there is one guy that I'll stick out there because I believe in him and his ability to figure it out, it's Waino.
And you got me on record of saying that. I said that on the show, that he's the kind of guy like Carpenter used to be, not as bulldogish, but yet if you got a – with the guy throwing not his best, he's actually even pitching poorly, and you got to throw that guy out there, you still have more confidence in him than you would another guy, because Wainwright just got it in him to get this thing done in a big game. But you still got to go with Martinez just based on all the numbers we've seen all year. He can be dominant.
I would be curious, and we're going to find out from our listeners, how many of them think we're crazy for even questioning whether or not it should be Martinez versus Waino.
I think a bunch of them think you two are crazy.
Well, no, I'm not saying it shouldn't be. I'm just saying that let's be realistic about who we're talking about here. We're talking about a guy that's been insanely loyal to his veterans, okay? He's battle-tested. Waino is battle-tested, okay? And,
right, but
that
brings in a different element, because I thought we were talking about what we felt.
That's right.
Now, if you're going to ask me what
–
may be why Matt Adams is playing today, because if you're asking me what I feel, Matt Adams is done. And I'm not trying to throw the man on the bus. I think he could be a great big league baseball player, maybe another national team, especially in the American League. But in my opinion, he's no factor with the Cardinals right now.
Okay, yeah, so let's preface this. Hands down, if it's my choice, it's Martinez. What I'm saying is, with our manager, with our GM, with the pitching coach – it wouldn't surprise me if it was Waino.
So how do you handle this at the end of the year if we're in a position to do the same thing, but the one game plan, the one wild card game plan thing? To me, I don't care who you start. I don't care if you start Wainwright, you start Martinez. If either one of them guys are in trouble in inning 2, 3, 4, I say you bring the other guy in.
You'd have to.
You can't wait on this thing and say, well, what about the rotation when we win this game?
Yeah, you'd
That's
have
what
to.
I'm saying. You know, we're playing today.
For sure.
Tomorrow's another day, but we're playing today.
Hey, listen. The guy in this whole mess, okay, that may wind up playing the biggest factor in this thing is Reyes. Because he would be set up to bring in a situation like that. And he's shown what he can do. He has shown – Reyes, above all of them, has shown that you can bring him in the second or third inning of a game and he can take it for you and just shut it down. So, he's shown you he can do that.
And you kind of going right where I want to say something. All right, so we've discussed in kind of in depth the starting pitcher thing. You listeners get your views, takes, just like we do. We know we're good at the end with O. The real problem might be in the middle of that thing.
Starters. And again, here's where you're gonna be. You're only gonna have three starters in a 5-game series. Who's going to the bullpen?
Well, Garcia. I mean, he'd be an easy one to
Woody.
See. What do you mean, Woody?
Woody? Or if you're playing the Cubs with those left-handed
Woody Williams? Or?
Hang on.
Who are we talking about?
Woody, my question to you is, at home, Jaime traditionally has pitched better at home, and with those left-handed bats in the Cubs lineup, would you pitch Jaime in game three if it's at home? And would you have Reyes in the bullpen?
No, I wouldn't. But a lot is going to be told in Reyes' last two starts.
It's going to be it's either Leake or Garcia.
We get this.
Pick one.
Well, hang on, though. A lot will be said in Reyes' last two starts.
For sure.
Because we get this puppy dog love with Reyes right now because he was so dominant in his last start. Now, if the next two starts aren't so pretty, then you might easily be able to go with the Garcia thing.
Wait a minute. We got puppy dog love with Reyes because he's been that good the whole time. Not just the start.
I'm talking about as a starter.
No matter what he's done well.
Yes, he has.
Everything he's been asked to do, he's done well. And what I said is that what he did really well that nobody else has shown they can do is this guy took a game that looked lost and said, I'll go ahead and take this out, get a couple of runs, and let's win this thing. And he did it. And then to follow that up, he said, I'll just waltz on into San Francisco in probably our biggest must-win game of the year, and I'll go ahead and shut them down too. And he's done it. Now, he is a rookie, and I get it. But at the end of the day, he may be the one that's going to play the biggest role in this whole thing. Hey, guys, I want to let you know, two birds on a bat. We are about this close, and you can't see it, but I got my thumb and my finger together. We are about this close to being 100% independent and official. We have our website, twobirdsonabat.com. Check it out, twobirdsonabat.com. Our logo is about to be unveiled. The department at the marketing and graphics department at lineupmedia.fm did a fantastic job. I sent it to you guys last night.
Love the logo.
What'd you think?
Love it.
Awesome.
Had a little bit. It felt to me like it brought a little of that nostalgic Cardinal back with the and I'm not going to give it away, but did you guys not think that?
I like the angry look, the bulldog look. Yeah. I think that's what we need right now.
Yeah, for sure.
Little bulldog.
And for sure. The broken back. Listen. I love it. I can't wait to unveil it to you guys. But go check out. It's very early in the process. It's just somewhere to house our podcast. We'll have more stuff on there for you guys. But go to twobirdsonabat.com. Won't be long. The next phase of this is our Facebook page, which will be Two Birds on a Bat Podcast. That's all coming. But the one thing we are extremely active on right now is our Twitter handle, Birds on a Bat Show, at Birds on a Bat Show. You know, we're following all the Cardinal fans out there. We're healthily engaged in Twitter. We're tweeting during games. We're sending stuff out. We're retweeting and liking when we see some great stuff you guys are doing. We're asking for the follow back, guys, at Birds on a Bat Show. And, of course, we've joined some of the groups on Facebook where everybody loves to be a Cardinal fan. We're posting our show through there. Give it a listen. I tell you what I want, and I sent this out, and I know we've talked about it at length here, guys. I'd love some feedback on our intro. From the everyday Cardinal fan. We're getting it back from our friends and everything like that. I want to hear what Cardinal fan thinks of our intro because I'm curious the age.
Well, I can already tell you what they think. How could you not love it?
Yeah.
You could hate the show, but you got to love that intro.
But I would love,
if you're a Cardinal fan.
I was saying that we ought to do the Twitter thing and have the poll with which one of them meant the most to the listener out there. Now, that can be defined what age you are. Obviously,
right, for sure.
The Harry Carey, Stan Musial thing may not mean as much to somebody that's 32 years old. But, you know, to me, and Steve-O's a Bagazzi guy, but to me, when Jack Buck starts saying, go crazy, folks.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, to me, that's the best. And all of them are good, though.
You know, when we were coming up with this idea, that was... I thought about the name of the show being Go Crazy, Folks, Go Crazy. I thought that'd be a great podcast name, too.
And then we could have Tom Niedenfuhr on.
Yeah, I bet he would love to do it. I know Jack Clark would love to come on here with him, so would Ozzy probably. But no, hey, guys, make sure you check it out. The group at lineupmedia.fm has been so supportive of the show. Make sure you go to lineupmedia.fm and check out all the different shows they're doing. Steve-O, you're doing a wonderful podcast. All of our Cardinal fans that were also slash Rams fans are probably all looking for a football team. It's probably really sexy and easy to either A, love the Cowboys or hate them. You guys deal with both at CowboysPodcast.com. Tell us a little bit about that show.
Yeah, it's Jono and myself are on CowboysPodcast.com. Once again, it's a fan's perspective. Probably, you know, you're not going to get the Troy Aikman, Joe Buck, X's and O's breakdown. We're not talking about the A-gap and what you're going to do, but we're going to talk about how many holding penalties Maurice Claiborne's going to have throughout the year and a lot of fun stuff and predicting Romo's demise or return to glory when that ever happens. But a lot of fun. Dallas Cowboys, you know, team I've loved since probably before the Cardinals. You know, I was introduced to them. So love covering them, and it's been a great experience. So CowboysPodcast.com.
Great stuff. All right, boys, it's time for This Week in Cardinal History. I found an interesting one, and it's the reason I'm going to bring this one up is it's going to go in a complete another direction with the playoffs coming. In 1983, Cardinal Bob Forrest pitches his second career no-hitter, beating the Expos at Busch Stadium 3-0. The 33-year-old Redbird right-hander first accomplished this feat in 1978. So the feat itself was amazing in that the span between the two no-hitters. And Bob Forrest was the fans loved Bob Forrest. I had to pick that event because with the playoffs coming, one of my favorite, and again, you're talking about a guy, I'm getting chills already thinking about it. I was at game six. I was in there in 2006. I was there in 2011. I've been to the All-Star game. I've been to a lot of cool things. One of my favorite playoff moments in Cardinal history. Now, again, you got to remember this was when the Cardinals found themselves in the playoffs. And was it 85 or 87 Fish? You'll know more than I can't remember because I get them confused. Facing the Giants and Jeffrey Leonard, I think it was 85. Right?
It was 87.
It was 87. Jeffrey Leonard proceeds to go out and basically handle our birds early with the one flap down home runs, which was uncharacteristic of him with the home runs because he wasn't like a 50 home run guy. But against us, he looked like it and shows us up with the one flap down, Mr. Cool. And who was it? The veteran Bob Forsch does what? Drills him right in the ribs.
Hey, you're forgetting.
And that was it. We didn't hear from him the rest of the series.
You're forgetting the fact that when Jeffrey Leonard said that as he was flying into St. Louis with the team over Lambert Airport, he said he looked at St. Louis and the only thing he could think of was Cowtown.
Yep, that's
this
right.
This is a Cowtown.
That's right. I forgot about that.
What's up?
Yeah,
hey,
it was Bob.
Can't live in San Francisco, man.
It was the veteran that said, "I've had enough of this. I've had enough of this showing us up. I've had enough of your antics." And gave him one right in the ribs. You remember that?
I do. But question for you. Is there any other more iconic home run trot than the one flap down? I still do it when I hit golf balls, don't I?
You do it when you hit golf balls, and it's completely obnoxious because you don't hit the golf ball that well.
If you'd have done that in St. Louis, we'd have loved it. But, yeah, I didn't like it either. But the one flap down. Hey, an interesting note on your Cardinal history is that not the only brothers – but
right.
Among some of the few, Ken Forsch also threw a no-hitter.
Yeah, that was another thing that and I knew you'd touch on. That's
Ken
why I brought it up.
His brother also threw one, I think, for the Angels.
You know, it was an amazing thing, but I do remember it because, you know, it's amazing the things that happen in playoff baseball that make it memorable, right? And again, what people are going to say? They're going to say, oh, well, I guarantee if somebody drilled, you know, people hit your Cardinal players and you get all bent out of shape. Well, let me tell you something. If one of my Cardinal players acts like an asshole and gets drilled, I'm going to say, don't act like an asshole.
Hey, you're damn right we'd be pissed off, but I can't remember a Cardinal player ever like acting like a butthead.
I mean, this
I
was
just don't remember it.
This was something else. And you know, it was an interesting time. I mean, the Giants were you know, becoming a good team. I mean, was it Kevin Mitchell?
Kevin Mitchell,
Will Clark. Remember the play Kevin Mitchell
Ozzie
made?
Smith.
Remember the play Kevin Mitchell made running into the
Ozzie
corner
Smith.
Off Ozzie Smith?
Barehanded.
Barehanded.
He took like a weird route to it, and it kind of sailed back, and he caught it
behind
barehanded.
His head.
Unbelievable.
Behind his head, barehanded.
Hey,
in foul ground.
I got a Kevin Mitchell story for you, though. When that was going on, I got to the park early that day, and I was up. We had seats. They were terrible seats, and I was working downtown and got up to the seats there, and it was early. Kevin Mitchell was out in left field, and he had been – people had kind of said he was an asshole, right? Or, you know, he kind of acted like whatever. There's some kid sitting next to me, young kid, screaming the whole time because a couple players had thrown balls at that. And I didn't think much of it. And I just said, hey, Kevin. And he turned around and looked at me. And I couldn't believe he did it. But he just turned back around. I did it about four more times. Finally, he looked at me and gave me the what? And I go, the kid wants a ball. And Kevin Mitchell walked over and got a ball from somebody. He looked at me and pointed at the kid like, I'm going to throw this to you. And if you don't give it to that kid, I'm going to come up there.
Yeah,
he threw it to me, and I gave it to the kid. So I got to say, even though I know he came off as an asshole, he was a nice guy.
That'll make him a great guy. He just got tired of hearing you saying, hey, Kevin Mitchell. So he finally gave you a damn ball, and so would you shut the hell up?
Well, anyway, hey, I'm going to give him credit for giving the kid the ball. I thought it was great. But anyway, that was a neat
boy,
time.
He could hit.
Yeah, boy, he could. Let me tell you. Hey, here's the thing, and where I was going with it. The thing that's great about it is we don't know what's coming. We don't know who it's going to be. We don't know what it's going to be. But if our history as a franchise is any indication, anything's possible. That's the great thing about being a Cardinal fan. I know right now that we got we're heading into Chicago today. It looks tough. Looks like we can't do it. But we're not out of this thing no matter what happens. And you never know who that hero is going to be, a la a moment that goes unnoticed by a lot of people. But Bob Forrest says enough's enough. You know, unsung hero. David Free. I mean, you never know. Ozzie Smith. You don't know who that guy is going to be, but that's what's great about being a Cardinal fan.
You're exactly right. You look up and down. I always bring these two, you know, this one guy in because it was a Spezio.
Oh,
I
yeah.
I mean, did anybody have...
David Eckstein.
Well, I mean, he was with us for a couple of years and played good. But, I mean, did anybody have, like, a better four-game clutch run than
Spezio? No, because that's what Freeze did. Same thing as David Freeze. I mean, Spezio was doing this stuff, like, it was unbelievable.
But Spezio wasn't an everyday player. I mean, he came in. I mean, he literally, if you remember that week, everybody's walking around with a red goatee in the entire city. I mean, I can't remember another guy turning a city on its head that was a nothing.
Because for you guys that aren't man enough to grow a real goatee, you guys were wearing fake ones even back then.
Well, I refuse to do it, but I do. But you are correct. People were doing it. Don't we always seem to have that guy, Nick Punto? Who was the other?
My favorite was Cesar Cendeno.
Hey,
when he came up,
Dan Greason. Remember when we got Dan Greason?
Yep.
I'm telling you, we always. They always say it's that, you know, Cardinal magic going to get him here. You know, Jeter always said it about the Yankees. Just hang on, the ghost will show up. You know, something amazing will happen. And you know what? I think that stems from when you are a franchise that has had success, you feed off that success.
Yeah. What Schilling say? Allure and Mystique. Those aren't just strippers. I forget what the quote was.
Allure and Mystique.
I don't know, but I like that.
Mystique. Pretty good.
Those sound like a couple of strippers, but
no. But you know, and again, I think it's a great time. I don't know. I don't know what's better. I don't. You know, would we be in a better place if we were 14 games up and we knew we were in?
Yes, we'd be in a better place. You can't argue that.
You can't argue that, but, man, this is exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe this is – for a longer stretch down the road here, it's probably more exciting than what the Chicago fans are going through. Because, obviously, since the All-Star break, they've won the National League Central.
Can't you see that up there building?
So there's
– like,
you know, ironically enough, I was just thinking about this. I was quiet on the show a couple minutes ago.
I know. It was unbelievable. Go ahead.
Have you noticed that there's not a whole lot of talk coming out of Chicago from our friends that are, you know, Chicago?
Yeah, it is. It is
real quiet, social media-wise. You know, I'm not getting the Facebook hits that are saying.
Do you think it's by design?
I think that they are an uneasy nervousness right now that they don't. Now, let me tell you what. If they get the Cardinals or get the Giants or get the Mets, and they win a series, it's going to be – hell's going to break loose because they're going to think that they're the cat shit, right? God. But, you know, I'm just – it's been real quiet.
I wanted to save this. I saw it. It was either last night or the night before. It was a former Cub. They asked him what he thought it would be like if the Cubs won the World Series, and he said – I wouldn't want to be within 100 miles of that city. And what he was saying, he wasn't being a jerk. What he was saying is, it's going to be utter chaos. Just crazy if they win this thing. It's been such a long time coming.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to get Boston all over again or whatever it is. But what are they on pace? How many games to win?
Oh, I mean.
103, is it? 104?
I can give you that here in just a second.
You know,
hey, where you looking? I got to say, I don't even know if we can speculate on what that's going to be like. It'll be crazy if they were to win the World Series. I mean, absolutely crazy.
And that's what I got out of this tweet from this guy, is what he was saying was he was basically saying that he doesn't think it'll compare to Boston. It'll be bigger.
Let's hope they don't do that stupid, because you remember Mrs. O'Leary's cow?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Knocked over the lantern and burned down Chicago?
Hey.
Let's hope that don't happen again.
Well, you know – you know, kind of going on that whole what do you want to see and everything like that. And we talked about this a little bit. You know, I would have rather won the 2004 World Series because we had 105 wins. We are by and far the best team in baseball, as opposed to the 2006. If I could flip flop those two, I would.
Yeah, so, but you don't get to.
I know, but from that aspect, when you know, and I'm kind of almost you know flip flopping my thing here. I would almost rather see – I mean, the Cubs are so good. I would almost rather see them lose this year and win 94 games next year and win it. You know, not be the best team in baseball. You know, come from an underdog, because then they don't get the whole, well, we were the best team. Well,
I'm trying to feel what you're saying, but look at it this way. Okay, the 04 team was one of the better Cardinal teams in a while.
Oh,
it was
good.
But was the ride, as far as a fan, as fun as 2011?
No.
I mean, that ride, I wouldn't And you know, I was
but
a grown man.
But it wasn't just
then.
Because of last four games.
I couldn't imagine if I was 14 years old in 2011 when that happened. I mean, I could never forget any of it. I mean, that was a wonderful ride, man.
It was unbelievable. And here's the deal. There's many memories to come. What makes it great is it's the unknown. We don't know what's going to happen. But, you know, the thing that you can never get away from, and this is that uneasy thing Steve was talking about. It's very simple, okay? All you got to do is get in, and it's been proven. All you got, anything can, all you get, pitching plays such a large role. Pitching and not executing play such a large role in this that the best team does not always win. That's what makes great. The best team wins the majority of the time in other sports. It does not happen in baseball.
So the cart, at least in short stretches. I think the best team does win in the long stretch. Like, throughout the season, the best team, they play so many games, the best team does win.
Yeah, but if you think about it.
The team with the most depth, the best team wins. But in the short stretches, like you're saying, it is baseball, and it's completely different. So the Cardinals are going to get in this thing. I'm making that prediction now, which many of us other
Saints. Hey, write it down and get it out on national media.
So what are our chances against the Cubs when we do get into the playoffs? Do we have a realistic chance of beating this team?
Here's the deal. Give me your biggest name pitchers, Lester, Arrieta, Lackey, give me Hendricks. Just don't give me some no-name guy that they're going to throw out there. Because we lost another one, I think, this week to a no-namer. Right?
Sure,
rookie, first star,
for
something like that. Give me Kershaw. I'll go face Kershaw. Baumgartner. Not me, personally. I'd love to. But, I mean, from a Cardinals perspective, all we do is beat those guys. Syndergaard, DeGrom, we'll hit them all over the place. Just don't give me that kid that we haven't seen because I guarantee he's going to throw a two-hitter, seven innings.
All right, I'm going to leave you on this note. If wild card, we feel like we're getting in. So the 99 percentile is that it's either going to be the Mets or Giants. I think we all believe Miami, Pittsburgh, done. Who's the one pitcher you don't want to face in either one of those games? Who's the one guy you don't want to face? Because it's, you know.
Fish, you called it. I mean, I just said his name. You called it last week that, you know, Baumgartner would out-duel
Kershaw.
And it was an out-duel. It was a two-hitter to one-hitter, I think.
Yeah.
But they ended up losing that game. But Baumgartner, big game, usually seems to throw good. But
that's why I said that, because he has been big in big games.
I'll go after him. I like facing those guys.
And
right?
we've beaten the piss out of Kershaw in any big game. I mean, beat him up, like made him look like a little leaguer.
Right.
So maybe it's unfair to say that, but my perception.
Well, I think they're going to win the division. My point is, I'm going through those. It's one game. So in a perfect world, now they may be in the same situation we are. They may not have a choice. They may have to throw their guy the last day of the season. So we don't know. But if it's all in a perfect setting, no matter who we throw, you would have to go to their de factos, and that would be Baumgartner or Syndergaard. I think we'd much rather face Syndergaard
or Cueto. Even throw Cueto in there. I mean, he might. He's pitching just as good as Mad Bomb.
We're bringing it down to a pitcher, and I would have to agree with you that I'd rather face Syndergaard than Baumgartner. But collectively, I would much rather face the Giants and the Mets, because I think the Mets have got a better team around them. I just think that they're, I ain't really that big, except for Bochy's got them ready to play and all that kind of crazy, stupid stuff. I'm not a big Giants fan. And look at, if you look at it mathematically, which Steve will tell you, I'm really.
Take your socks off.
Not every. You know, two of the three teams are going to get in. So you got a 66%.
That's right.
Right. So you got a 66% chance of getting in. And only a 33% chance of not.
I'm just floored by the whole thing of, if you look at the remaining schedule, it's just odd for us to sit here, and this is what I want to close with. It's odd for us to sit here knowing that we're going to play the last, is it six games? Seven games at home. Okay. At home against two teams that are out of it and not had good seasons. And we're not confident. I mean, we're confident.
No, I am confident.
No. Let me take that back. Bad word. We aren't, like, we're in.
No.
Well, you got to be realistic. I mean, my God, there's 10 games left with three teams for two spots, and both the other teams are.
But typically in history, if the Cardinals had seven games at home against teams that were less than 500, you would be like, we're in.
Okay, I agree with that.
That's what I meant.
I agree 100% with that.
That's what I meant.
I saw Fish outside earlier looking into trees for a squirrel.
Oh, yeah.
So, we will take one.
Yeah. You know, and you might dye that goatee a little red there. You're going to bring out all the stops.
You know, I might do that. I might shave it down like Spezio and redden it up a little
maybe
bit.
Maybe you should red it up. If we're lucky enough and I hope they get this done. But, you know, Benji's coming in town to do the thing with the Cardinals. You know, we're hoping that he's going to grace our presence right here in studio. If he gets in here, if you don't have that thing read, I'll be upset with you, Fish, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I know. And that is a cool thought, but I'm sitting here also thinking I'm a grown man, and the last thing I want to do is look like an idiot in front of Benji.
You know, you should have said something to your barber then.
I know. That's a bad haircut, ain't it?
Hey, guys, thanks for being with us this week. We appreciate it. We appreciate everything you guys are doing to help us grow the show. Please share the show with your friends and all your fellow Cardinal fans. We do this show for you. We do it in this format because we want to be like you. We don't want to talk above you. We don't want to try to act like we know more than you do. At the end of the day, we're all Cardinal fans. We're all in this together. We're all pulling for the same thing. One team, one dream. Go Cards. Hope the Cubs falter flat on their face all weekend. And we got something great to talk about on Monday. But for Two Birds on a Bat, I'm one part of your team, Jimbo. That's Steve-O and Fish. We'll see you guys on Monday.
Go Birds. Thanks for listening.
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.